Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour, as well as my guest, on this March the 19th, 2009, or if you are on the East Coast and the Central Time Zone, as I always remind you, it is now March the 20th, still 2009. Welcome. Lots to talk about tonight, and I've got a very interesting guest who is going to enjoy at least my introduction, hopefully, and some of what I'm going to allude to. I had the opportunity tonight to actually sit in on a meeting where the Port Authority in my area is trying to wrap up a real estate transaction on a piece of property that they control due to a loan by the city a number of years ago. This loan was in the form of a bond, and no payments or reimbursements to the city's investment of $1 million have actually occurred over an eight-year period, and the business that was set up on this special piece of property, which is a riverfront property, went down the tubes. And I did some research on the ownership of the property and found that a normal website for a restaurant should at least give some clear indication of who owns the business, who's involved in the business, although I can tell you unequivocally that the business contract and the organization set up to be silent partners was nothing but a money laundering scheme, and the resulting corruption caused the business to close down, people to not get paid, income withholding taxes, in other words, were not paid. Charges by the State Board of Liquor Control against the business resulted in fines because of watering down alcoholic beverages. In other words, taking rot gut whiskey and putting it in the top shelf bottles, those types of things. And not that I'm necessarily condoning or condemning drinking, but if you're paying for a product, you expect to get what you're paying for. And those that imbibe like to know that they're getting what they're paying for, because you pay for top shelf liquor more than you do for bar whiskey or the regular alcohol that they use for mixed drinks, which usually come off of a tap at the bar. And you've seen your favorite bartender or barmaid mix a drink, and they use a little pressurized gun that squirts the alcohol into the glass. Okay, now that becomes an issue when you're charging people a lot of money for an inferior product, or when you're not selling them what you're licensed to sell. Okay, and that word license is really important because you get permission to sell alcoholic beverages in most states by owning a liquor license. And so basically what I'm getting at is the whole transaction as it was put together, the ownership of the building, payments to the Port Authority, payments to the city, and not to mention the quality of the business. The business was absolutely atrocious. The food was awful, and the silent partners moved in several years ago, unbeknownst to everyone, and took over complete control of the company. I found it very interesting that a 1%, possibly a 2% owner, was portrayed to the public as being the main owner. And when I did some research on the website, I found out that it was a post office box in Buffalo, New York. It's in another state, and although it's advertised as a suite number. The suite number is a post office box. And the name of the business was is not that important. What's important is the name on the mailbox. And we're talking about a restaurant, and the mailbox name was the Zimbabwe Widows and Orphans Trust, which smacks of money laundering. And during a time of war, according to our laws in this country, that is a treasonous act, and it is also an act of terrorism under the Patriot Act. So I brought up these issues at the meeting, and of course, they were well received by certain members of the Port Authority, but their hands were tied and they had to do this deal because the corrupt people involved in the original deal had taken control of the party, and it would have been a nightmare for the city. Now, that is no reason to not address the criminal issues involved. And I can tell you that in your own communities, this is going on day in and day out, and eventually it will be flushed out, and the perpetrators will be caught, thrown in jail, and fined, have their property finally taken away, and we will turn this thing around. Now, I mention these things because they are important to understand what kinds of things are going on in your country. Your property is being sold out from underneath your feet. As you listen to the show, it's going on all over the country. There are people that are devoting all of their time to nothing more than that as an end. And we mention these things from time to time. I'm going to be, as they ratchet up the financial corruption in the central banks and on Wall Street and in certain law firms around the country, and as we experience more plane crashes with plane loads of people going to their death while they collect on the insurance, and I say they, those that are performing these plots, we are going to witness also on our end a rapid revealing of these methods and what's going on. And you in your own areas on a local basis can approach these. Now, I'd be very interested in learning who in the listening audience is really paying attention to this, because many people, thousands of people every day are losing their homes. And this has been orchestrated. We're going to talk about how this is done, some of the causes behind it, and what some of the solutions may be. And I say may be because it's going to require people getting off their rear ends and actually doing something. With that thought in mind, I want to invite back to Evident Footprints a man who has spent a good part of his life studying the Bible, and he still does. And as well as that, he has taken a very interesting and close look at the mind games that are being played, and how this has permeated the political system and the religious system. Something which is known as, to those who have really studied these issues, as British Israeli-ism. This is a concept of nationalizing patriotism and using Christianity, in the case of Americans, as the vehicle through which to pull this off. Christianity is being used in other parts of the world for the same purpose. But this is a British-Israeli plot to control the world. And with that, we'll bring tonight's guest on board, and hopefully he'll want to talk about this a little bit. Tonight's guest, as I mentioned, is a biblical scholar. He appears on many radio shows. He's also somewhat of a constitutional scholar, and the topic of administrative law, which happens to come from England, by the way. My good friend, Mr. Greg Pappas. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you very, very much, Don. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. I love being on with somebody who's done the research you've done. It makes it a lot more exciting for me to share with you.
Well, I'm glad. you just came out of a meeting yourself, and this is probably ringing in between your ears what I'm talking about right now, because... Yes. This is part of the matrix, isn't it?
Yes. Everything in our lives has been the Matrix, and I it's funny when you're in the middle of it, it's hard to see it because you can like step away or like look at your life from above it or something and start seeing everything for what it is. And so I've begun looking at everything now from a distant position. And I was telling the guys tonight when we were closing the meeting off about the movie The Matrix, how whoever wrote that script really had a complete handle on the whole system of enslavement and this administrative statutory system. And it's profound. It's ever present. It crosses into all areas. It's like the line where Neo was not out of the Matrix yet. They were sitting in that room, and Morpheus says, "You have the look of a man who accepts what he sees because he's waiting to wake up. He's expecting to wake up." He says, that, ironically, that's not far from the truth. So I think I think he said the Matrix is all around you. It's everywhere you go. It's everything you do. It's when you go to work. It's when you go to church. It's when you pay your taxes. It's everywhere you go. And so it literally is, as I think we talked about the last time, it's everywhere around us. Tonight's discussion at our group meeting was about finding out that in the courts and at the county clerk's office, we have found that there are two sides to the court's filings. So we've been led to believe that after June 25th, 1945, after the Administrative Procedures Act of 46 was put into action and all the states have capitulated all their sovereignty over to this District of Columbia Municipal Corporation, that there was no longer any sovereign positions for us, so that there was no longer a constitutional side to file on. And so what tonight was largely about was the last Wednesday, and I'd like to put this out to everybody all over the planet, actually, everybody in the United States and Canada, at the very least, to go down to your county clerk's office and find out what we just found out. And that is that the county clerk wears, they've got them mostly as registrar recorders and county clerks here in the country, but they also, under the filing side of their job, the county clerk's side, there are two sides to file in. And in the 15 years I've been looking at alternative law and studying other subjects, and I know guys that have been at this for 30, 40 years or more, I've never had anybody tell me that there was an actual constitutional side to file at the county clerk's office. And so this past Wednesday, we could go yesterday, we went to the court clerk manager, administrator, chief administrator, and asked if we could, if any kind of a filing would be accepted in the court clerk's office, and the response was yes. They don't restrict what's filed. And when I asked if there was a constitutional side that could be filed on as opposed to the statutory administrative, I made the presumption. I just left the presumption that everything they operate under is statutory administrative. She retorted back, "Well, I don't know of anything other than the statutory administrative side," meaning that, as we know, attorneys are attorneys at law, and they only can practice on the statutory administrative side of the ledger. But this woman had been obviously there for a number of years to be the manager, and was an older woman, like, you know, at least my age or older, and she did not know, but she would accept any filing and let the judges decide. Well, I wasn't satisfied with that, so my friends and I went over to the county clerk's office and talked to the supposedly elected county clerk and pulled him out of his office and didn't have time to talk to her or anything else to get set up for the question. We asked the man straight out, are there two sides to file on within your job, whether it's at the court clerk's office or at the registrar recorder's office where you take recordings of filings? Is there, besides your statutory administrative side, is there a constitutional side to file? And the man said a resounding yes. And I about fell over. My jaw was on the floor.
Was that at the same clerk's office or at the recorder's office?
Well, this is interesting. There are two separate buildings. They're in the same complex. Mm-hmm. And the court clerk's office was in the courthouse. And she was in her office way in the back. She doesn't generally deal with filing. She's just the one that administers the office. Mm-hmm. But her boss is the county clerk. If we looked at the organizational chart for our county, and I believe this may be the case all over the United States, and maybe the same in Canada, because we really are operating on parallel systems under the statutory administrative system. I had always bugged me that all these filings go in as constitutional filings, but get immediately treated as an administrative statutory filing. And so because of an issue that happened with a friend of ours last Wednesday that I think Chris addressed and spoke about last week on his show and spoken about, I guess, again last night with the victim of that case, because there was such a contrast in the way that this judge and this coroner responded to his truly superior filing of having a superior position of being a true sovereign under the Republic and not being a 14th Amendment United States citizen, as they presume us all to be, this judge, instead of actually listening to him or being able to hear it or say, well, let's set this aside so everything else is done and I'll hear this last to keep everything clear, he decided to get really angry, try to contract the guy in three times and then bring in nine bailiffs and torture the man and take him to the ground when the man was not resisting anything, just waiting to see if this judge would respond to the paperwork that said that the court didn't have jurisdiction over him.
Yes, I got a chance to listen to that broadcast, and you could hear the struggle going on. He was asserting his constitutional right and basically saying, get your hands off of me. You know, I don't buy this contract, this agreement. I'm not a part of this. And they still hauled him off.
Yeah, that guy's got some problems on his hands. But it was an impetus for us to go figure this thing out. In fact, we learned tonight the idea that in a government position in this country, a friend here who is really a historic law scholar, and he pointed out that they can't wear two hats. So one of the hats is official, and the other one is ex officio, meaning it's outside of the official capacity. Well, the most important job, I think, is the court clerk job, which they're elected to do. But the theory is now that the actual job itself that he's holding on the official side they were saying that it was the court clerk position, but I think it's the registrar side. And that the county clerk position, which is over the district court clerks, is made into an ex officio position outside of the parameters of the official law. And they're trying to masquerade and hide this. But the beauty of this thing was the man didn't know we were coming. You know, he did not know what was going on in the courthouse that morning. He didn't know that there were some men there doing investigations on this case. And when we went to his office, there were five of us, I believe. We just walked in, and they had guards following us around at that point, because anybody who actually starts asking serious questions, you know, their Masonic masters want to make sure they know what's going on. So he was candid. I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Some of the guys think that he was playing dumb. My version is this. I was around the low-level Blue Lodge Freemasons, and I've been around the high-level 32nd, 33rd, and all the way up to guys that were higher than that. And this guy is what I would consider a safe man to put in a potentially volatile job, one who's not intelligent enough to be able to think for himself, one who knows the basic rules of his job and is supposed to funnel any information that comes from to other people that are more intelligent than he to his superiors. And I believe that that's probably why this guy's probably somewhat of a high level. He's probably got a 32nd degree earned pre-Masonic level. So they buttered him up, put him in a position that has some responsibility, but one that if nobody knows the power in it, is pretty much kept low key. So his handlers, which would be his grand poobah masters in the town, would have control over him. So three or four times he said to us, well, nobody's ever asked me in 14 years on the job about the constitutional side of my job. Nobody's ever asked me. Nobody's ever asked me. Like, this is a strange event. You're asking about something. We're going, well, we were led to believe there wasn't a constitutional side. We were led to believe there's only one side, and that it all was specifically constitutional, and that you guys were transporting it over into the administrative statutory. But little did I know that the guy was going to come clean and say that there is a constitutional on one side of the ledger side and a statutory administrative on the other.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, ask your question. I'll probably be able to add to it.
Well, I was sort of going to make a statement and follow it up with a question. I presume that some aspect of his position and something that lurked in the back of his mind told him he better speak the truth on this, not knowing who you guys were. Quite possibly you could be lawyers yourself, and that it required an honest answer. or simply that, as you say, he was disarmed. Do you think it was a combination of both, or what were you able to glean?
Yeah, I think you're right on both counts. I think it was both. I think that if a guy doesn't know who people are, although he did know one of my friends that was with me, but I don't think he really knows his official capacity, because actually my friend had actually run in for a state senate seat on the Constitution Party before, so that might have made him even more cautious to say the right thing, because obviously his job regulates the elections through the registrar's side of his job. Mm-hmm. So very likely he may have been disarmed, and because of the possibility of having official people in front of him, spoke the truth. But we knew, when we looked in his eyes and we got the initial responses from him, he was telling the truth. There was no doubt, because his response was immediate. There was no time. This man, you know, would have had to pause for a moment, think about a lie to say, because, like I said, in 14 years, nobody'd ever asked him a question.
Yes. So you wouldn't have to necessarily ask him for any paperwork. You have the Constitution.
Well, I think that, but yeah, so we were debating this tonight, and one of the discussions that was an open point was, if we can file on the constitutional side, then first of all, let's start changing all the wording in the instrument that they've got us tricked into using, like plaintiff and defendant. Let's
yes.
turn it into an accuser. Let's use other words, I can't remember the words we used, but let's change those words. Let's, instead of putting in a motion to dismiss with just asking permission from a servant to do something, which makes them think we're nuts, when we put a motion into somebody that's supposed to be inferior to us at a status level, let's use the word, I'm giving you an order and a command to dissolve. Here's my order and command to dissolve these contracts. I mean, we're looking at a variety of options and possibilities. And the theory is, the debate tonight was over the fact whether there are any real judges in the courts. And the greatest argument was that there are none, that these are administrators, that they are they're administrative law clerks, to quote one of my friends, and that they are, that there is window dressing. In fact, when you get a citation, this is what one thing that struck me. On a citation, it says you must appear before the clerk of the magistrate of the blah 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 county, of the blah 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 court of the blah 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 county, and go on, the magistrate, the clerk. Well, that's exactly where we want to go. You know, we're thinking about within 3 days of receiving this notice from these people. And by the way, we've already started resisting in many cases of not signing these tickets. That people are not being arrested for not signing the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Because so they must have found a way to monetize these without the signatures somehow. But there's been a move by a number of people to say no, not signing it. And the cops are like realizing they're going to be arresting an awful lot of people for refusing to sign tickets. And so that's the first step, I think, of starting to show some civil resistance to their, the games that they've been playing with. So that's one phase. But the biggest thing we're thinking is that if these aren't real judges, which we know they're not, and they're only operating on the administrative statutory side, which even the clerk administrator last Wednesday said that any filing that she didn't understand would be given to the judge to rule on. Well, we just kind of chuckled when we found out there was a constitutional side to file. Hey, there's nobody to actually rule on it because there's nobody in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's nobody in that house, then we could literally write our own two-page orders to and commands to dissolve the contract. And what I'm saying is I think this is the beginning of an unraveling of their system. In fact, when Josh was in custody and he was dragged before one of these magistrates for a video conference for the arraignment on the original issue, I still don't know why he did it, because he'd already been in jail. He could have kept him there all day. He was going to be there all day himself. He went ahead and at first didn't answer when they tried to get him to plead to a charge, and he ended up pleading not guilty. And in essence, he said that the judge, when he got him to do it, chuckled and pointed at the camera and said, "Gotcha," and laughed with the other judges in the room with him. In other words, if you're a sovereign and don't remain a sovereign, and you choose to go back under their game by acquiescing to the fear and the threats and all the stuff they do to you, then you go right back under the statutory administrative. So my theory is that if you're not in there by shackles and chains, or you haven't already started a process that they've already been sucked in there with, by returning their, or by answering them with a negative averment and a positive averment, the negative averment basically meaning You know that I'm not a 14th Amendment United States citizen. The Municipal Corporation of the District of Columbia, Administrative Democracy, and all political subdivisions and franchises. If you can go from that position to that's a negative affirmative by stating you know it's not testifying and just making statements, it puts the fact that they have knowledge of it, and if they didn't, they do now. And then the positive affirmative starting off with you know that I am a sovereign of the Idaho Republic or Washington Republic or Ohio Republic, and you know whatever you say. And I would say the other thing. I mean, I've got another phrase that we're looking at from a biblical standpoint, and I could throw that out as an option at you, too, and that's something that I came up with based on my own biblical interpretations out of John 10, 27 to 38, Romans chapter 8, 14 to 17, and Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 to 4, and I'd say something like this. You know that I am, now this is going to sound really arrogant, and I'll explain in a second. You know that I am Son of God, Sovereign King, Lord, Priest, and joint heir with Jesus Christ. And then cite those references or just put the references in there that link all those together, and I'll explain what that means here. Let me go back to that in a second. So the third part would be binding them to the constitutions of their oath that they swore to protect my rights. And on the statutory administrative side, yes, they've created these oaths thinking that they're never going to have a need for them, because they've tricked us always into the statutory administrative side. But once we become free of the statutory administrative side, now the constitutions of all their oath are now can be bound to them. And this is a theory that's not really been broached by anybody previously that I'm aware of. And then, and I've got a statement for that also. Go ahead.
Yeah, in light of the fact now that you have opened this Pandora's box, basically.
I know.
It doesn't behoove them really to staff people working under constitutional filings. In other words, they are admitting that that's a possibility, and they are making a public spectacle of it of sorts. I'm maybe not choosing the best words, but they're making it known to the public, something that can be seen, something that can be heard, and when the word gets around. If they honor it, they have to choose one or the other, and obviously they have scrapped it for the system that they're using right now, the administrative side. Now, in respect to that, what comes to mind is the language that they use in the old time movies that we watch, or the particularly cowboy movies. They use terms like the accused. And they wouldn't say the defendant; they would say the accused. And those words, the word accused, is a French word. It's not even from English law; it's from French law. Accusé, or to charge, and the word plaintiff comes from the French word plaintive, which also basically means one who brings forth a charge. Or one who brings forth a case against another.
Okay. Right.
So these terms, you know, we know that they use doublespeak, and they actually use words that mean the opposite of what they appear to be. You and I have had that conversation on air.
Yes.
And there are many, many words being used in that sense that the actual use of the word, which appears to mean one thing on the surface, means the opposite, and they have basically taken anything of substance and applied that method of syntax, we'll say, to the English language. English, I feel very strongly, is probably the most victimized by that process, and that reverts to my introduction about British Israelism.
Very good. Yeah, you mean then the whole creation of a language to play with our heads and our minds, so we'll never be able to actually figure out who we are.
It's mind control, yes, and propaganda.
The whole thing.
In fact, I don't know when you checked your email last, but you might check for the Union Jack. I sent you a copy in PDF form.
Oh, great.
And it discusses this, and I think it's very, very critical to what you're talking about.
Well, that is because our flag is based on theirs, obviously, also the red, white, and blue, and the whole
yes.
thing. So,
and the big X in the middle. You know, the X is the symbol, their symbol for Satan.
Oh, right. Oh, it is. Yes, Savior. Yeah, that is, I believe. Wow, I don't know. This is an area I'm weak in this area. This is not my.
Well.
But the connections, everything's been linked together, though. Everything that the British had done has been done to us successfully. Obviously, they weren't able to pull it off as soon as they did in England. It was done in 1760. Here, it took a considerable longer time to pull the whole thing off. They did it through their secret paternal orders, the Masons, and all their. And I say that, distinguishing between the masonry of George Washington and the masonry of Harry Truman, those are a little different.
Yes. Yes, well, this book is courtesy of Ken Adachi, actually. He had posted it on his website, and I was reading an email response that he sent to a lady who said, "I'm a Christian. What do I do here? What is the right thing for me to do in light of this impending New World Order and what I know?" And he suggested, one of the first things he suggested is that she read this book. And I had been looking for it. It's amazing. I had been looking for it for a couple of weeks, and here it was right on Ken's site. I should have asked him, but I downloaded it, and I sent it off to a few people that are looking at these issues, because this is critical to understanding the core plan and the methods that are being used to guide our thinking down certain paths. Now, I started out by describing at the top of the show an experience I had today. I got to sit and watch corruption, just watch it, and basically I had the opportunity to speak, okay, and bring forth facts that warrant an investigation. And here, even on the Port Authority, sits a police officer, okay?
Oh.
This man is involved in now what they call law enforcement. It used to be an officer of the peace.
you mean right from peace officer to law enforcement officer, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and to see their faces turn red. Actually, at the end of my presentation, they went into an executive session to make the final decision, but I had painted them into a corner in such a way, just by exposing the true facts of what occurred and the level of corruption, and their faces turned red while I spoke, and they took feverish notes, and you could hear a pin drop in the place. There were quite a few people there to hear this, but I had the sensation while I was imparting this information to the Port Authority and the people sitting there that no one really cared. You know what I mean? It was so far beyond their comprehension what I had described, yet it was quite simple and quite concise. And I was approached by the head of the Port Authority afterwards. He came up to me and shook my hand and thanked me for delivering the truth. Literally, those were his words.
Whoa.
And
that's a rarity.
Oh yeah. And he said this needed to be said, this needed to come out, and I said, "Well, I agree with you. It needed to be said and it needed to come out." And I'm probably the only person in the whole community that has the courage to say it. Many are saying it behind closed doors, but they don't have the courage to say it up front. And I said, it's the truth, and that's all it is. And notice no one countered any of my statements. No one said I was a liar. No one said I was exaggerating. And they acted as though I never even said it. That's acknowledgement that it was 100% accurate.
Right.
Well, a 5-minute meeting took over 2 hours.
Whoa.
So you know they were dealing with those issues. I didn't sit around for the conclusion, although I knew what the final decision was going to be. And people reported all the stipulations they added to the agreement. So I knew I had some impact. They knew now they were being watched, you see.
So they, in essence, have their superiors that were directing them how to make them wealthy and control everything for themselves. And yet you came in and showed these people that they were watched, there was something they needed to do, there was a moral thing they needed to do, and they actually applied it. That's amazing. That I'm totally flabbergasted.
They applied it to the extent that they felt they could, okay? There was a lot of political, this has become a political football of sorts, and they applied a lot of, I applied a lot of pressure to the situation by revealing the corruption and the nature of the corruption and the specifics about the corruption, not just making a blank charge, but literally outlining in detail the obfuscation that occurred. And the numerous ways that they broke their own laws. and this was the prior board. I gave consideration to those that were new to the Port Authority, although there were there was at least one member present who was part of that original group that that pulled the shenanigans 8 years ago.
Oh.
Now, this is a cookie-cutter technique that's being used day in and day out, as I mentioned at the top of the show, in towns all over this country. And if people would only pay attention and just do a little research, it doesn't take a whole lot. I found this on the Internet, and I found it looking in rather innocuous locations. But nothing matched. Why would you use your name as a front to a business that you only own 1% interest in?
You normally wouldn't,
okay? And the guy obviously was skimming money from his partners, and when they found out, they moved in and took control. Yet they still for 2 years had violations. The business was mocked and ridiculed by people in the community. You couldn't call what they were serving food. And they were watering their drinks. So what can one expect to see other than rudeness from the employees and non-paying of salaries, non-paying of bills, assessed to the business, non-payment of the lease, non-payment of the monies that the city loaned to acquire the property in the first place? Now this is scratching the surface of the corruption that's there, okay? Because it's probably being used as a drug depot. Okay, and so the interest in them controlling that and having it open is to have lots of activity so that they can mask the drug transactions that are taking place. It's not real complicated.
Well, that's what's always been propping up the society. It's like everything now is a front for an organized crime. The government is organized crime. Everything is organized crime, and the courts are the attorneys have become the gatekeepers for us to be able to keep from being freed from this thing. It's like Luke 11:52, where Jesus says, "Woe to you lawyers, for you hide the key of knowledge. You hinder those that are entering, and you don't enter." And then the scribes and the Pharisees, which were the judges and the clerks, conspired together to get Jesus to say something out of his own mouth, of which they might have used to accuse him. And that's the world we live in. Everything is an accusatory system for somebody to get control over somebody else, and it's the antithesis of the model that Emmanuel taught us, which was to have love. It's a complete backwards. So guys like us, they come along and say, "Well, my conscience, which is really the spirit of God moving us to do the right thing, says I got to do this. It's not expedient for us." I mean, for God's sakes, you know, with the knowledge of guys like us have. And with what we know about the world, we could be multimillionaires or billionaires. And yet, if you look at a billionaire like Warren Buffett that everybody sings the praises of, or Bill Gates, these guys aren't into caring about anybody else. They're into amassing more and more and more wealth. They have a whole lifetime of just amassing more wealth, all the while not caring who you run over and walk over and destroy in order to accumulate it. It's basically, I guess, the testimonial of our age.
Mm-hmm. Now this aspect of British Israelism, which I'm speaking of, is really the Constitution, we hear separation of church and state. This issue resounds through the Constitution. And yet,
yes,
what do we actually have? We have the state controlling religion, when we're speaking of government affairs and edicts that come down through law and right. public propaganda statements. And then we have the church telling us the things that we do to be godly, but what they're talking about, and this is the essence of the Union Jack, is this is an illusion of bringing God's kingdom down to earth. Okay? That's Satan's plan, is to pretend he's God, to come down as an angel of light and masquerade as God, as if he is God. And they, exactly. this is the British Israeli system. So this is a communist, fascist, Jewish, Zionist plot. And that's all it is, just to enslave the whole world.
Well, I think religion is one of the key component gatekeepers for this whole system. You know, I don't know if I mentioned, but at this party that I helped put together back in 1979 for a birthday party for this man who turned 50 at that time, and the people that attended this party, I saw these religious leaders at this party, and that's when I started correlating that religion is nothing more than another gatekeeper. You have your attorneys as the gatekeepers, your judges, you have your politicians, your teachers, your political, oh, I already said that, but your ministers, I believe, are another gatekeeper. I couldn't figure out for years why I would show the truth of something to all these men that, you know, claim to be pious and try to follow. I mostly was on the Protestant side of things for many years. I attended a Protestant seminary in California. And when I would try to take these simple truths I saw in the Bible and show them how they applied in a practical day-to-day basis, it's like their eyes glazed over. They couldn't accept it because it wasn't one of their seminary professors or the heads of their organization that ordained them telling them that there's an application and a commercial standard or commercial application out of the New Testament, like Jesus leaving the wedding feast at Cana of Galilee after turning the water to wine and going to the temple and cleansing the temple, driving all the money changers or money merchants out of the temple, you know. And like I was remembering something I'd seen in Joseph Campbell's series with Bill Moyers back in, it was something that was produced in 87, I guess it was. And in his series, he shows the microcosm of the world. He says the temple was the center of life throughout all civilization, and it entailed everything. It was the religious center. It was the government center. It was the banking center. It was the law center, the court center, the center of education, the center of prostitution, the center of everything. And as societies became more sophisticated, the temple became your first place, and then the others started splintering off. And he said that you had your government buildings being built, your banks, your corporate offices, and he said a microcosm of that is Salt Lake City, when that commercial enterprise was set up, when they first built the temple, and everything was run out of that, and that was a good-sized building. Then they built a government building right down the street, which was many times larger, and that was next. And then after the government building was built, they built the corporate buildings. If you look at Salt Lake City, the corporate buildings are taller than the government building, your corporations and your banks. And so it's a microcosm of where the society's gone. And of course, we've been so trained to look at everything as separate, we never thought to look at them as originally coming from the same thing. In other words, it was always something to manipulate our minds, to get the people to work for free, to keep the people as commercial slaves, or as Morpheus tells Neo, you know, to turn a human being into a Duracell battery, copper top.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I as well as many others, probably everybody I know, has been hoodwinked into those concepts. But there came a time in my life where I began questioning where is the separation of church and state, especially when the government is dictating to the church what they can and cannot say. That's the whole concept of church and state, is that remains separate. Yet it was only separate by declaration. They just made the statement, okay? Calling black white and white black doesn't make it so. But because they said it, that was just readily accepted by everyone. We were taught that as children. And they taught us that children when we were most impressionable. Even though, as most children are, they're quite conscious and on a spiritual level and quite aware of the game. It's just that they don't have the cognitive abilities or the communicative skills to argue what they know in their hearts.
Right. So, that's the whole point of Jesus saying, suffer not the little children to come unto me. Better you have a millstone tied around your neck and be cast into the sea than if you cause one of the least of these little ones to stumble. That's the
yes.
whole point of him making sure that children are able to connect on a spiritual level that they came from the Creator to do. They were brought from the Creator, we left the Creator, and we're to have that spiritual consciousness all our days. And, of course, that's why even good intended parents will immediately begin indoctrinating their children into their various teachings, and not thinking that, wait a minute, maybe this child actually knows more than me. Maybe I should learn from the children. And that's part of the discussion. You know, we need to learn from the children. Well, we need to learn from the children because the children don't have all this extra baggage. That's one of the parts of coming in here fresh.
Yes.
It has to be mind job. Of course, our society mind job does. We mind job our kids. And I can attest that I did it. I'm trying to undo it, at least on three of them right now. And it's a tough go when the mom has got them going to church and continually brainwashing them for many more hours a week than I get to have time with them. And so I have to undo it. You know, I have my boys watch The Matrix every couple weeks and sit and analyze it and tell me what it means. and we discuss the mind, you know, how it relates to being mind-jobbed and to the concepts of being born in sin and all the other stuff. You know, it's like, you know, no, sorry. You know, the original sin was the birth certificate that they monetized you and cast you on a sea of commerce. You know, after you came out the birth canal, commercial term, delivered birth to the dock, delivered by the dock door. I mean, it's all these terms are commercial and shipping terminology. And they create a commercial certificate, a document that then gets monetized and sent after it goes to the Department of Vital Statistics. Goes to the Department of Commerce, then to the Depository Trust Corporation, where then it fends off and bonds are sold at A.G. Edwards and other bond houses. And we know that every time we get a ticket or anybody goes to jail, a bond is created. And then what do we do in our investments, our 401Ks and our IRAs and SEPs and SARSEPs, we invest in stocks and bonds. And, of course, in Williamsburg, Virginia, a stock and bond represented a punishment in town square for doing something bad. And so we invest in essence, we invest in the servitude of our friends and neighbors, and all the while acting like, well, that doesn't matter because, heck, I'm following the church's words. If, when things go bad enough in here, you know, Jesus is coming back and he's going to rapture us out of here. I mean, I know that's a crazy way I just went in that analysis, but that's kind of how I see this crazy world right now.
Yeah. Greg, we have a caller. Or would you like to take a call?
Oh, sure. Do you want me to sum up what I said really fast, though, real quick, so I can wrap those few points I made earlier up?
Yeah, if you want to do that, if that's nagging at you, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Let me get out of my mind, get out of my system. Okay, now I threw out some stuff that sounds totally goofy, but at least I want to throw it out there because I know your show's archived, right? So at least if people go back and see something, they hear the whole rest of it in the same context. I was throwing out there a theory that says that we break the presumptions of our being their 14th Amendment citizens and as sovereigns have a higher position than they have. So I laid out the scenario for being a negative affirmant. I'm not a 14th Amendment citizen. I made a one positive affirmant, and I threw out a second one. And I cited some scripture verses. I wanted to throw out this other, if I didn't, the scripture verses were John 10, 27 to 38, Romans 8, 14 to 17, and Hebrews 1 verses 1 to 4. Okay. And I use the golden rule out of Matthew 12, or 7:12, which is, therefore, all things, whatever you desire that men should do to you, so you should do to them. This is the law and the prophets. And there's an argument that says I got to quote the Ten Commandments or something with that, too, but we won't go there tonight. But to wrap it up, to bind these guys to the constitutions of their oath, there's a statement that goes together something like this. You know that the only contract that this is like to a judge or somebody who claims they have authority over me. You know that the only contract between us is the one obligating you for me, stating that you will support, protect, and defend all my acquired invested rights as supported by the constitutions of your oath, which include the Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union, the Constitution as fully amended in 1791, which is the Bill of Rights. and not limited to those alone, but to others. And then I would borrow this issue of view of administrative action. I'd stop these people from being able to go forward with their administrative game. Okay, that being said, at least that's an initial way out of protecting ourselves and finding ourselves out of the presumption of this administrative democracy or this administrative statutory democracy and allowing us to go back at a sovereign position. So, okay, now with that said, we'll go to your question.
Okay, let me just comment. I have had a few listeners request something, a basic procedure. You know, it doesn't have to be point by point by point, because there are so many possibilities, but a general roadmap, let's say, of how to argue that. Do you have anything in writing that I can maybe post on my...
I've left out something right now. If we post it only as for educational purposes only when we put it up, when you put it on the website, that would be great.
Yeah, this is...
I'd be happy to give you that.
We can even put it up for entertainment purposes.
That's fine. Sure, yeah. As long as they'll think that I'm giving, you know, legal advice, because, of course, I can't give any legal advice because they're, you know, anyways, yeah. So what we're teaching is, I think this is the quote, Dr. Sam Kennedy, it's illegal. Not illegal, it's illegal. It's not legal at all. But anyways, yeah, that's great. I'll give you a general outline.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a good starting point. And then I would encourage people, when you come up with some ideas based on what we share about on your discussions, to actually share back some of their ideas with me. And so then we can refine whatever it is we're coming up with and all help each other, for entertainment purpose, find our way out of this mess.
Yeah. We'll entertain ourselves to bliss. How's that? Okay.
That's right. There we go. Bliss.
Okay. Ron in Pennsylvania, thanks for holding on. How are you this evening?
Oh, doing okay. You mentioned about the Union Jack earlier, and my ears went up when I heard that. I had an interesting, about 2.5 years ago, case where I represented myself in court, and I've done so a few times before. I won one and lost a few, so a person who represents himself isn't necessarily a fool. Sometime he is, yes. The petitioner.
Well, you know, but that applies to the attorneys too. So
yeah. The case I won in New York, I was the defendant. The plaintiff sued me. The plaintiff had a lawyer, and one sentence, I had the lawyer stuttering and dropping his papers on the table, with the judge coming down with the gavel and throwing the case out. So it just was a procedural situation. But the one here in Pennsylvania is unusual. We had a waste hauler that comes around and picks the garbage up. And to be very brief, we don't have them anymore because they put that out for bids. And the old hauler was reputed to be mafia by one of his old employees that was disgruntled and so forth. Well, there had been many people here that weren't paying their bills, and they decided to go out and gather up all these people and force them into a contractual payment, which they did agree to do anyway. So in the ensuing court battles that some of them had, I had an agreement with the city where I live that I did not need to pay for this service because the service was never requested nor was it ever used. Well, they're going to bill everybody whether you live there or not and all this kind of thing. Typical communist Judaic practice. Well, when I went into court, we had four courtrooms, and the Court of Common Pleas was the appellate court above the local district magistrate. When I went in, I looked at the chairs, and something was unusual, other than their hatred of me for them having to pay for everything because I declared a pleuris oath, and also that I represented myself. That was two strikes against me. Well, that's too bad. They'll have to live with it. And I looked at the chairs, and as you go into this courtroom, you go down into a well, as if you would descend on steps in a big theater, which is exactly, figuratively and literally, what these were.
Mm-hmm.
I carefully looked, and I sat in the chairs that were newer. The chairs all below me were old oak, made exactly the back splats were in the exact size and proportion of the Union Jack, all of them. Now, if I also saw the Admiralty flag, and I wondered if there was any symbolism connected with that in a defendant or others sitting above the Union Jack and being above that particular symbolic system. What's your take on that? Just coincidental or what?
Greg, you want to answer that?
Wow. Well, according to a friend of mine, from this is in Pennsylvania, you said, right? Or was this in New York?
Right, this one's in Pennsylvania. And incidentally, I live in the second most corrupt county in the nation.
Okay. Well, would the first be New York City or what?
Well, the first one is supposed to be Cook County, Illinois.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, Cook County is number one.
So I've heard.
Okay. Well, so you're saying that there was the back of the chairs was a Union Jack, and then there was an Admiralty flag in the courtroom. From what I understand, Pennsylvania is the state that the original Supreme Court was in, right? That was in Philadelphia. And I've, according to Stephen Ames, and I never was able to confirm this, but in 1720 or 1721, there was a law passed in Philadelphia that the Supreme Court of the colonies was there, and that everybody who had something to appeal, they could appeal, I think, within 2 years of a decision from any of the other courts of the various colonies, could go to this court and make an appeal to the king's court, and so that the courts there really were recognizing the authority of the King of England or the Crown of England. And then I remember what Ames told me, something that I was never able to confirm, and that was that in 1995, that law was altered, and that it was altered, believe it or not, something that was built 1720 was altered in 1995, and at 1720 there was no United States of America. And so, according to what Stephen told me, that the law was extended from a 2-year time window to appeal to the Crown to indefinite time period that you could appeal to the Crown if you knew how to get it to the right court in Pennsylvania. So the only conclusion I would draw from what you're saying is that if Stephen was right, and I don't know whether Stephen's originated that information or the informer originated that information, but if it's true, then that would show that there was a connection in 1720 or 1721 to the Crown of England, and that still existed in 1995, and that would explain why you'd see both American and British markings in that courtroom.
Well, the Admiralty flag has the gold fringe around. I'm well aware of that. In fact, that's against Title IV of the U.S. Code. That's actually a desecrated flag. But with the symbolism running rampant throughout the whole country, you really don't have to know what to look for. Now, the mistake I made, number one, was not arguing the case judicially. I argued it administratively, and that was a mistake. You're going to lose. However, if I would have done that, I'd have made a fool out of the attorney, which was one anyway there. They represented the city. But they had a screwy system here on the courts, which is too long to go into the filing and so forth right now. But if I would have, I wonder how I would have fared if I would have argued the case judicially and sat above the Union Jack and not lowered myself into the realm of administrative law. Now, as it turns out, the decision did not go to my favor. However, they shafted themselves with a pencil and simple mathematics. They lost about half of their recovery money, which, of course, I wasn't going to bring to their attention. And the clerk of courts and the judge violated 6 or 7 rules of court. And had I pursued the matter, which I was strongly thinking of doing, I probably could have wreaked havoc. I wreaked part of it on the lawyer anyway through the review board, judicial review board, or the, now there's another term. One is for lawyers, one's for courts. But my father at the time was extremely gravely ill, and I didn't think the stress of him finding out about it would help his heart. And he passed away Easter Sunday 2 years ago. Now, prior to this, they had threatened to bring him into court for this particular matter. And when I filed an appeal on a joint appeal, which is frowned upon but not prohibited in Pennsylvania, they said he had no standing. If he had no standing, why do you want to go ahead and throw out a warrant for his arrest for not paying the thing? We have a system here that would defy the Three Stooges. In fact, I think I'd rather go up against them on sitting on a bench than anybody else. But it's a real mess here. But symbolism is all over the place. And when you mentioned the Union Jack, as I said earlier, this brought some things to mind. And I'm going to have to check that out. Philadelphia was the nation's capital at one time up until around the time, I believe you said, around 1720. I might be wrong on that.
It was the nation's capital.
Relevance, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, let me throw some stuff out to you, though. I am I respect everything you've done and learned and studied, but I need to throw this out. The reason that Don originally, I think, had me speak on the first time I was on with him, we were discussing an issue written by a book named Lee Brobst, B-R-O-B-S-T. Lee Brobst wrote a book called USA the Republic is the House That No One Lives In. You can Google it and look for it online for free and read it. You print it off, download it, print it off. And it's a primer that says that there's two countries that exist today. That and part of that came out was the fact that I was asked, is Barack Obama the President of the United States and the President of the United States of America? Those are two separate entities. My answer is the same now. He's only the President of the United States, which is basically a foreign unincorporated, foreign unincorporated implied charitable trust. It is not the United States of America, which was defined in the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and then verified as the Grand Old Corporation in William Dixon versus the United States, 1811 Justice Marshall decision, which states that the United States of America is the Grand Old Corporation. Now, the reason I'm saying this is this. The courts are administrative statutory courts, and as of June 25th, 1948, all the states lost their sovereignty, which makes the whole Tenth Amendment sovereign state movement moot argument. It's irrelevant. It's a nonsensical, non sequitur. It's another distraction argument for the patriot to be taken up. The reality is there are no judges in the state courts in America at all. Those are all administrative law clerks, or I call them just simply 14th Amendment administrators.
Okay, now, may I mention here, interject a little bit? There is a distinct legal difference between a U.S. citizen and a citizen of one of the United States. Why could not therefore declare his sovereignty and demand that the matter be heard in a court of law or judicial court?
There are no courts of law in this country. Part of our discussion tonight was to discuss whether you can actually even talk to one of these judges. And we're contending now that there's only one place that you can take a case into. And that is, if you go back and look at the movie Amistad, it's an 1832 case or something, and Spielberg got it right. And when they open the court proceeding, they say, in the District Court of the United States of America. That is an Article III court. That is the original de jure court. It is an Article III Admiralty Maritime Court. The District Court, the United States District Court, is a territorial court. It applies to the District of Columbia and all its political subdivisions, which would include, primarily, as they define it, Puerto Rico, Guam, Virgin Islands, Saipan, I believe, Guam, Philippines, and the Canal Zone. And that is the courts we have. You would actually have to establish yourself as a sovereign and of course, everything they have is a trick. Like you see two flags stacked, it's always the United States flag over the state flag. That is administrative statutory fraudulent system. And again, I don't have time tonight to go through all the explanation as to how they've given us evidence with each new Black's Law Dictionary to change the color, and they've changed the definitions of Black's Eighth, which came out a couple of years ago or 45 years ago now, is basically all statutory administrative commercial law. There's no constitutional law in the book. And
well, one would have
chain.
To file his declaration and put it on file with the clerk of courts as him or her being a sovereign citizen in order to proceed forth at any future time in any court case, and they'd have to follow from there. You can't file and declare yourself something that you're not.
Well, the thing is, we're discovering, and we're not going to go into the details tonight, but hopefully in a future discussion we can lay out the details as I'm learning them, as to how to be able to go to your county recorder or your county clerk and file on the constitutional side, not on the statutory administrative side, which, by the way, everybody does.
Well, she gave me an argument before. She never heard of some of the rules of court. She's been there 20-some years, as she so proudly has mentioned. I might as well file a thing with the janitor. So that's the big battle there. I know where to get the forms and how to file the cases, but when you start to have a fight with the clerk of courts, that's not helpful.
No, you're not starting to fight with the clerk of courts. You're establishing your status. You read Lee Brobst's book, you'd be filing your status at your state newspaper, at your capital, for three to five weeks, depending on your state's rules, to verify your status. If you're going to follow some other men's studies who've been completely exonerated and removed from the system altogether, they file at their county clerk's office, and they file there in such a way that they now can make their presentments at the court clerk's office, where they are seen as a sovereign. And okay, this is a really delicate subject. We're all slaves. We were conditioned to be slaves in every aspect of our thinking. And we were never trained, we were always trained to respect a pseudo authority, which is not an authority at all. It's fake.
Okay, I need to ask a name. Now, you mentioned county clerk. We have several county clerks up there. Now, prothonotary is a term used for the clerk of courts, the head clerk of courts. Now, the clerk, there's also clerks up there for deeds and other matters.
You need to find out. Look, I don't know about the rest of the country. I just know the West. I've only lived in the West, okay? So I can just speak for Western states. But as far as I've seen it, we pulled the organizational chart of our counties, and it was listed as the voter, and then there's this long line of offices, like county commissioners, prosecutor, the county clerk, the district court judges, the assessor, all these are on the same level. Underneath the district court judges, you would think that the district court clerks would be, but they're not. The district court clerks are under the county clerk, who is supposed to be an elected office. Now, when we... A week ago Wednesday, went and asked the chief administrator of the court clerks if she could accept a constitutional filing. She says, we accept all filings. I said, have you ever seen a constitutional filing? And she said, no. I said, so you presume in your process that all filings are statutory administrative? And she said, yes. And I said, so you would know a constitutional filing if it came into your office? And she said, well, no, and I don't worry about it. We accept all filings. We let the judges decide on them. And I kind of chuckled and laughed and said, well, if he's only a statutory administrative judge, he can't very well rule whether it's constitutional or not. So I thought that was funny. I thought, well, let's go find out the answer from her boss. And I didn't ask her who her boss was because I already had seen the organizational chart. So we went over to the county clerk's office, and I went to the information and asked where his office was, and they pointed us to his office. We went in there, and we got him out of his office, and because he didn't have time to talk to his court administrator to find out that there were guys asking difficult questions, he popped out of his office and we said, we'd like to ask you a couple questions about your job. Well, we'd like to know if there are two sides to filings in the county. And I didn't just limit it to the court clerk's filing. I wanted to know at the county level, at the filings in his county there at the registrar, at the recorder's office, where we record our documents, if he would accept constitutional filings and if he knew there were two sides. And the man immediately said, within probably 2 minutes of the conversation beginning, that he said that, yes, there is a constitutional side to file on and there is a statutory administrative side to file on, but this is really strange that you would ask me this because I've been on a job here for 14 years and nobody's ever asked me to file something on the constitutional side.
Well, just as strange out this way, I don't know how it is out west, but in when you're going through your criminal rules or rules of criminal procedure and you're getting all your stuff together, you also have to go and pluck out the particular county you have because they have their own set of rules. We have 67 counties here, and the attorney I consulted with when my father passed away and had the estate here, he lost a case for that very reason. He went and heard the thing over in the next county. But Pennsylvania has the laws of filing rules of criminal procedure, which I followed, but then you have to have two books in front of you and look back and forth to see which particular dynasty that you're going to file in and what the king over there wants to do and all of that. Now, if we're within the confines of Pennsylvania, I would think it would be one set of laws, not so. And I don't think you're missing that.
No, I understand what you're saying, but you're missing my point. If you file on the constitutional side, all their rules now disappear.
Let me interject something, gentlemen. We could go on for another hour with this. let me interject something. Ron, go to usa-the-republic.com.
USA-the-republic.com. Okay, I will do that.
Okay, you will find, just put, you can put actually in the title in their search engine, USA, the Republic, is the house that no one lives in. It's there.
I will
read it. Now, if I can interject a statement.
Yes, I'm sorry.
What Greg has described in terms of administrative law, the uppercase United States versus the lowercase United States of America,
yeah.
are two different entities in that the capitalized United States is a two-party contract, pure and simple, and we are not included in that contract. We are considered subservient or serfs to that contract. We are a third party.
Does the birth certificate printing in all caps or caps and lowercase have any significance? If so, my birth certificate here is in caps and lowercase.
The significance of the birth certificate is that your father did not sign the birth certificate. Your mother signed as an informant, making us all legally illegitimate bastards.
Yeah, he was.
And that being said, in a legal sense of the world, not the lawful sense, in the legal sense, because the law went away in 1933 when we gave up our gold, and the law went away by the 1938 in the Erie Railroad versus Tompkins case, which is in the book, when people stopped actually asserting their position under the Republic and allowed themselves to be presumed to be under the democracy. But the birth certificate is significant because it is signed only by the mother. The state becomes a king under the doctrine of parens patriae. That was a Latin phrase. You can find it in the law dictionaries. Mm-hmm. And that is where they transferred us over into being these legal fictions. So, and that did create the capital letter name, though. You are absolutely correct. But even if the instrument doesn't have your name in capital letters, it still turns you into a legal fiction. We were commercially launched onto a sea of commerce. Mm-hmm. And that's why these commercial instruments are as they are. Anyways, what was your point of asking that, Tom? Sorry.
Well, I had made the comment about the uppercase and lowercase use of the word United States, and Ron asked the significance of his name in caps or in mixed fonts, in other words, uppercase and lowercase.
It was a trap. They say they can only do it in capital letters. No computers can read things upper and lowercase. So they put everything into capital letters because they're referring to a corporation. They're a corporate entity. In order for them to talk to us, we have to be a corporate entity to them. We cannot be a flesh and blood. They cannot communicate or see flesh and blood.
Hmm. Okay, gentlemen, I'll conclude. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Ron. You take care. Okay, you see now, there are people that have had some amount of experience with this, Greg, and still, I've read The House That No One Lives In, and it's worth reading. I recommend that. I also recommend The Union Jack too. Tell you the truth.
No, it sounds worth reading. In fact, we think that there's some sources out. I think I said on your show that Lee Robst was deceased. He's not.
Mm-hmm.
I think his book actually on the subject may be elaborating more than USA the Republic is The House That No One Lives In. I don't have the website yet. One of the people at the meeting tonight wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wishing he was there tonight because I was hoping to get the website and get his conversation that he had with Lee. But that since I don't have that, I have nothing to report. I just know that he's alive and he's written a book on the subject that elaborates more. Also, I have a friend who has shared some information with me from a former friend, an acquaintance of Lee Probst, and he's come up with a process similar to Lee Probst that he's actually applied all the way to get himself all the way out of the presumption of being the 14th Amendment United States citizen. So that, to me, is quite profound.
Mm-hmm.
So.
See, people are under this illusion that, okay, I'm going to approach a different way of expressing my sovereignty or my lack of guilt in this charge, or I'm going to defend my honor for being charged with something that I did not do, whatever the case
yeah.
is, okay?
Sure, sure.
And so they say, okay, how does the system operate? Because I want to make sure I comply with the system. However, in the process of wanting to comply with the system, you are trying to extricate yourself from the system. You're getting out of the matrix. That's your goal, to liberate yourself, to free yourself.
Right.
So your method cannot be their method. Their method is designed for them. You know,
exactly.
If you go to play air hockey at the local bar, you can't expect them to hand you chalk and a cue stick to play air hockey. You don't use chalk and a cue stick.
That's right.
And you can't try to adapt it to the game of air hockey.
And it's like the Inquisition, you know. I think I see you're a liar if you deny it, and if you're, and your hair, let's see, your hair tank if you deny it, or a liar if you say no. Anyways, you're basically damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Their system's got you one way or the other.
Heads I win, tails you lose.
That's right. That's exactly what's going on. So that's
yes.
what they've done to us.
Yes. Well, Greg, we're out of time.
Thank you, Don.
Been, as usual, it's been great. I appreciate you, you know, being able to make the show tonight in spite of all the things that you've had going on. And I think we have you up again this month. I should have.
First, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So first. I'm looking forward to your next appearance on Evident Footprints. And, you know, I encourage people to contact you. Is there a way they can do that if they have some questions or someplace you can refer them answers?
Well, first of all, just go to my, I would refer them to a website if I had it built yet. I have a friend of mine who's going to start building one for me next week, so we should be able to get something up and start posting some discussions. My email address is gp and the word truth, T-R-U-T-H, at gmail.com, gptruth@gmail.com, and
okay.
And just send me an email. And if you absolutely need to talk to me on the phone, put your phone number on there, and I'll call you on a weekend probably. So let me know if I can call you on a weekend, and I will. Okay.
Yeah. And, now understand, folks. This is if you're in a really serious situation and you don't let's say time is of essence. How's that, Greg?
Yes. Yes.
There are a lot of people that come up with questions when they think about this. And now we want to stress you're not offering legal advice. You're
no.
basically informing someone of their rights. You're giving information. And
right.
they make the decisions as to how they're going to go about this. That would be like calling up Greg and asking him what kind of car you should buy. You know, you may not know how to drive, and Greg knows how to drive, and just because he does know how to drive doesn't mean he's qualified to recommend that to you. He doesn't have enough information about you or
right.
your tastes or your aspirations. Least
exactly.
of all, your purpose and your goals. So.
Well, and what they already know. I mean, you know, everything that's taught to somebody, if it's not given the philosophy with it, they're going to end up filtering it through their own, you know, grid. And this is the difficulty it is to teach people the process.
Mm-hmm.
If we've all been thinking like slaves our whole lives, and now we're starting to think like free men, how do we make that transformation? So, you know, so that's there's a lot to it. That's why most of them that I study with don't tell you anything specific. What they tell you is the idea generally how to get it for yourself. And then that way, you know, you're not writing forms for somebody that they leave your name on their form and send it off or something. And then
mm-hmm.
when they get challenged by the court, they don't know what they're doing. So the really what it boils down to is if everybody's got to find their way to that narrow gate, you know, in Matthew 7, verse 14, where it says, it says, enter by the narrow gate, for broad is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many are those entering into it. But for narrow is the gate, and constricted is the way that leads away to life. And few are those who find it. It's like this process of getting out is a process to where we actually find a way off that broad way, which the courts are trying to keep us on, and the government and everything else is, onto that, find that narrow gate, get on that narrow way, and free ourselves completely. And that's really what I'm showing people, is a way to that road that Jesus was
yeah.
talking about.
You know, Ron had brought up a point about the multidimensionality of the courtroom and someone sitting above someone else, someone sitting below the Union Jack or the flag or some area. If you just picture in your mind a king or a queen sitting on their throne, they're usually sitting on a riser. They're usually sitting on some level that's attained by climbing a stairway.
Right.
Okay. So you picture that in your mind. The king or the queen is always sitting the highest in the presence of everyone else. They actually,
right.
as the king or the queen walks through a courtyard or a hall or into a room, everyone bows, everyone lowers themselves. Okay, that's merely in body language a sign of subservience. Now, you have the judge sitting at the top. You have the attorney standing up lower than the judge, even though the attorney might be very tall. Still, they make the judge's bench much higher, the highest, loftiest place in the courtroom. And then they have the witness sit down. So you have the order right there in your mind, the judge, the attorney, and then you. And in some respects, in most respects, even the audience in the court, the witnesses or the spectators in a courtroom are even lower than the witness. There's a tremendous amount of body language going on there, and there is symbolism in that body language. And just like you can read a person's body language when they're talking to you, arms folded over their chest, they're basically not listening to you. They're guarding themselves. They're protecting. In fact, they're protecting their heart, which unconsciously they know is the place where they discern the truth. They're protecting it because they don't want to hear the truth, and they're showing you that. Or they're showing you that they're not telling you the truth. And so you'll see often, even in a courtroom, you'll see an attorney fold his hands over his chest. And if you learn how to read these things, you can actually begin to understand the wordsmithing that's going on and the psychological games that are being played. This is spiritual warfare, Greg, in closing. I've been saying that for a number of years, and that we seem to come back to that topic. That doesn't mean that I don't pray or that I don't think about God.
Right.
or try to discern what's going on. It is spiritual warfare, and it's masked itself as government. It's masked itself as our protectors and our providers, and they're trying to sell us this concept of heaven is going to be down here on earth. We don't need to consider going anywhere else. You have a closing thought about that?
Well, you mean as far as the great distraction that they've done to us to sell us this nonsense about. Well, first of all, as long as you can get people to believe that they're going to get raptured out of here and then come back with reign with Christ for 1,000 years, it keeps them good slaves while they're here. In other words, they will never wake out of it, so you can basically keep continually fleecing them one after the other. There's no change of that. They can do whatever they want. So as far as I see it, the escapist mindset, which is what religion's job is to do, is while they're picking your pockets, they're telling you that you can escape.
Yes.
Which you never do. So, as far as I'm concerned, the word religion, as we were trying to use it, stinks. But as it was originally intended by the founders, was to understand that our laws are all derived from God, nature and nature's God, and the laws of nature and laws of nature's God. And that being said, we would have, the founders established a law based on that. And, I've had my friends having to be quiet while we were transporting from one part of the country to the other part of the country. So it was remarkable. So I got to thank you guys very much for letting me be
excited
and warm ahead of time.
Yeah, let me make a comment. I see it as them trying to establish, like you said, 1,000-year reign of Christ here on earth. In other words, we will have God on earth instead of knowing God in heaven. Okay, and it's another trick. It's another game.
Yes.
End of story. Thanks for playing.
It's right, and they've got us playing in every aspect of our lives. So as long as they can get us believing that we're going to go to hell if we don't do, what it is they want us to do, then, as long as you have this fear in the back of your mind, they've got you. But for me, I always watched these guys that were telling me that I was going to go to hell, and watched that they were really worried about going to hell themselves, and I realized they didn't care at all because they knew the whole thing was a joke. And unless, of course, you consider that there's two planes of consciousness, which is what I would say is what's given out in John chapter 8 when Jesus is confronting his enemies there, and he lets them know that he's from above. He came from the Father, and to the Father he's going back, and he's from above, and they're from below. He's from above, and they're from this world. And I started looking at that going, wait a minute. These guys that run this world, they really are agents of this world, like and they're stuck in this world, and they can't get out, and they're happy being stuck here. And then they take the rest of us as we come through this process and suck us in, and then enslave us, because they've mastered the art. Now, I know this is a concept that is really tough for Christianity, because it was tough for me, that you could think of a concept of reincarnation, or that the spirits are stuck here. But I'm beginning to believe that these people that Jesus is condemning in John chapter 8 weren't set off to this hell as the church teaches, but were basically committed or condemned to being stuck on this earth forever. And that they would be continually in these positions of evil and using usury and banking, and they'd never be able to experience true love at any time in their lives ever. That's sort of how I'm looking at it.
Why is it when you do something that someone else disapproves of, they say go to hell? They never say go to heaven, even when you do a good thing.
Right.
You notice that. The focus is on hell, right? And yet, where is that place? Are we not in it already?
Well, there's wars and rumors of wars every day. We live in a continual state of conflict. We've been in that place. We were born in that place. And that's why I think it goes back to why Jesus doesn't want us to screw up the heads of children, or God doesn't want to strip the heads of children with, and I should say Elohim instead of God. I know I went into wording phraseologies there, but.
Yeah, well, we're using a generic term so that people can understand.
Right, and tonight I think that's appropriate too, so I just want to make sure that people know that's why we're using it. But we were sent here to be reconnected with the Creator, to have an experience of balance and wholeness and love and community. And what do? We come here the day we're born. Oh, we got to get my kids, got to be better than his kids, because of course they're going to compete with them. Oh, he's got to master this skill or that skill, or be able to beat this guy in the money game or whatever he's got to do. And then we have people trained for war, and we have people, and everything's warfare. We've been in a perpetual state of war since the Civil War.
And
the guys that tried to find a country that was going to be built on peace, not on war. And yet, what did they do? The very guys that founded it got taken over by guys like Andrew Jackson, who probably had his good side about fighting the bankers, and then slaughtered the Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what kind of craziness is this? I guess, if it isn't evidence of hell, I don't know what it is. Fight the struggle. You got to eat every day. Your body has to be maintained.
The biggest lie is that peace is achieved through war, through conquering your so-called enemies. I mean, we're still at war. We're still at war, are we not?
We are. We're in this country, and the world has kept a war on time. War on terror, war on poverty, war on crime. I mean, the fact that now there's a new department, FBI agents are going around the country meeting with people, and they are called the anti-terrorist group, and now they want to have a terrorist czar. So I guess now they're getting, there's not enough terrorism that these guys have been bringing to the world. They've got to bring more.
I heard yesterday that Barack Obama issued, I don't know if it's a signing statement or what, but he's made it illegal to use the phrase war on terror. So we have to say, and I said this to Ken Adachi last night, we now have to say war on or on terror or war terror. You can't say the whole phrase.
That is funny. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I heard this last night, and I mean, the guy was dead serious, and I've heard it from a couple of other people, too. Greg Evenson mentioned it to me today. So I guess, you know, I haven't Googled it yet. I'm afraid to Google it. I have to put in there somewhere. And I'm not, because you can't say the whole phrase, so...
Oh,
of course,
that's too funny.
It's getting more absurd, and now we don't have terrorism. We have humans that commit acts of great catastrophe, something like that. I'm paraphrasing it. This is Napolitano, the new Homeland Security czar. I mean, these word games just don't end. I still want to see the birth certificate, okay? I want to see the birth certificate and show me that I'm right, that he's from Papua New Guinea, not Kenya, not Hawaii, not British Columbia.
Right, and if I'm sure you're right.
You know, that's where I stand on that. So don't tell me what I can say and I can't say.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I'm not part of that I'm not part of that contract. I'm sorry. I didn't play the game. Okay? Didn't buy the ticket to the show. I'm not sitting in the seat. It's amazing. Well, Greg, we got to go. I look forward to your visit on the 31st, and I thank you for your wise commentary tonight and sharing some of these recent discoveries with us. That's very heartening. And I recommend to everybody, this is Greg's Greg's recommendation. Watch The Matrix at least 50 times. You'll figure it out.
I don't know about that many times, but we're putting a book together on that. We'll explain the whole thing. But, yeah, if you see the dialogue, you got to watch it at least 5 times or something.
All right. Give my best to all of our mutual friends. You know who they are.
I sure do.
And I look forward to the next visit.
Thank you, Don, very much. It's really fun to be with you. Sorry about the scatteredness tonight, but I still, the next one will be even better.
No, it's fine. It's live radio and it's real, okay? We are real people now, you know? If we want to see the plasticity, we know how to turn on the boob tube.
That's true. That's true. We are real, that's for sure. Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it very much.
All right. You have a good evening. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Greg Pappas, and he'll be back with us at the end of the month. In the meantime, special thanks to Don Newsome and Doug Newsome for making Evident Footprints possible on bbsradio.com. Seth Hendrick for the sound tonight. Sound was nice and clear. And to the listening audience for tuning in, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.